We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Charlie Goldsmith, Tyler Dragon. How you guys doing?
So it's going to be 90 degrees this weekend in Cincinnati. The weather's good. You got Ja'Marr Chase riding around in a scooter in Cincinnati. It's great weather outside. Everybody, I encourage them to get outside. So I'm doing good because this is kind of that California weather that I'm used to. So I'm doing good. How are you two doing?
You know, this is kind of my favorite story overall as a Cincinnati native. When someone who doesn't live here explores the city, sees, is almost surprised even by what it brings, and then just honestly loves it, goes around, enjoys the town. It's happened to just personal friends of mine time after time after time when I've had experiences like that. So it's good to see it now on a professional stage.
Yeah, just going for a run yesterday, and Ja'Marr's on his scooter just riding around the banks in Cincinnati, and he's pretty much done that all weekend long and really embracing it. Obviously, we talked to him last week, and he said he didn't expect Cincinnati to look like it does. He thought there'd be more land and all the tall buildings. So yeah, he's definitely embracing it and just seeing what's out there in Cincinnati. Guys, one thing that I have a problem with, it's not sports related, but I actually put this out on social media yesterday, the cicada thing. It's happening. It's 17 years. I don't know all the science and everything behind it, but I'm just a little over all the photos of all the cicadas. We don't need that. We don't need that in our lives right now. They might exist out there, but I need people to stop posting about it.
Yeah, they look like they've been underground for 17 years. There are some ugly looking creatures. I can tell you that. They are not fun to look at. So I feel you, Lindsay. I've seen a lot on my timeline as well. I haven't really seen too many, you know, walking around outside. I must admit, I haven't been looking for them either. But on the timeline and, you know, on the internet, I've seen way too many of cicadas.
Here's my take, and I'm not going to put the name of the company out there, but I went for ice cream the other day, and I was looking at the menu, and they had a cicada sundae, and I kind of had a double take, like what? No. But what it was like Oreo crumble, which is like the dirt, and then gummy worms coming out of the dirt on top of your ice cream, which I get the concept, but to call something a cicada sundae was just truly shocking when I walked into the ice cream store.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit
that. I'm one. Sure that wasn't Grater's ice cream.
Again, it was not Grater's ice cream, but right here, so I don't want to put them on blast.
No, that's totally fine. We do not need any cicada desserts, food, or anything. We just need them to go away soon. And no more photos, guys. I just can't deal with it. Moving on, though, this was the story of the week. Obviously, headlines nationally and locally. Joe Burrow's doctor talked to Adam Schefter, says it's all systems to go for Joe Burrow. The thing about that is, it's what we've all been talking about since pretty much after the surgery, that Joe Burrow was on pace. We talked to Joe back in January, and he felt obviously ahead of schedule. Things were going well. That really wasn't breaking news to me, but obviously when Adam Schefter tweets it, it's a big deal in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to a couple NFL people after Adam tweeted that out and wrote, you know, a story on it. And it was like, we've been reporting this for months, and what was reported in the story really wasn't new news. Now, his doctor being quoted, yes, that was, you know, I guess newsworthy, but he really didn't say anything that was not reported months, weeks before. And I'm not just patting myself on the back. All the Bengals reporters, we've been pretty much on par saying the same thing, that Joe Burrow is targeting week one, and that is the goal for not only him, but the entire organization, to have him on the field week one, taking that snap. Now, let me reiterate that he's not going to play in the preseason. That is pretty much already been ruled out, barring a miracle, but don't expect him to play in the preseason. As far as, you know, training camp and OTAs, that the jury's still out on that. Right now, he is 24 weeks post-operation. That happened on Wednesday. So that is 6 months. He's 6 months removed from surgery. And I've said it, I'll say it again. The prognosis for his type of injury is 9 to 12 months. Week one, when they play the Minnesota Vikings at Paul Brown Stadium. That's right around the 10-month mark on September 12th. So that puts him, you know, right on that timeline where he's at, you know, roughly 10 months in a 12-month overall, the long, you know, end of it, his recovery timeline. So it's definitely possible for him to play week one, and he is ahead of schedule. So that is good news. So that means, you know, once September rolls around, if he's running around, can cut on that left knee. And most importantly, if that left knee can withstand hits and he feels comfortable running, throwing, cutting, jumping, then of course the Bengals will, you know, probably put him out there, but they aren't going to have him out there unless he is 110%. It's not about short term, it's about long term with Joe Burrow. They believe that he is the franchise quarterback, not only of the present, but of the future. And they don't want him on the operating table again, or rush him back and maybe have a setback if that knee takes a hit, because teams are going to go after him. Teams are definitely going to go after him. They know the Bengals' offensive line on paper might not be as good. And they know that Burrow probably won't be scrambling as much as he did his rookie season. And he might not be as fast. So they're going to test his knee to see if he can maneuver around in a pocket, extend plays with his feet. So you have to be cognizant of all that before you put him out there on the field. You don't want to get him hurt. You don't want him to have a setback or re-injure that knee. So they are still going to be cautious. Week one has always been the goal. That hasn't changed. And if we were betting people, then we would bet that Joe Burrow would be out there week one. There is still a couple more hurdles for him to cross, but as it's looking now, is he will be available and playing week one. But he's 6 months removed from surgery as of Wednesday, and there's still a few more months to go and a few more hurdles to clear before you all thumbs up, all hands on deck, he's playing week one.
You know, when I saw this story, I thought it was the biggest story of the Bengals offseason. When it all centers around Joe Burrow the way it has, you kind of want to hear something definitive that Joe Burrow will play week one. And I was thinking, how will we get that news? Zach Taylor and the Bengals coaching staff, as we've discussed before, doesn't set timelines for injuries in a succinct, specific way, which I completely understand. They're protecting these players' health. But for example, you know, with AJ Green, we never got he's going to play this week in 2019. With Joe Mixon last season, we never got he is going to play this week. The only opportunity to have a moment like this would be for one of the most respected doctors in the industry, Dr. Ella Trosh, to say Joe Burrow is what it was, all systems go for week one. And to have that moment this early in the offseason now changes kind of everything about OTAs and training camp and the preseason. We know where Joe Burrow's recovery is at. That timeline hasn't changed, but what changes now is the expectation. It's not if questions, it's when and how and what's it going to look like. It's so much more of a certainty because of the perspective that we got from Dr. Ella Trosh, who of course has as much experience with injuries like this, it seems, as any doctor in sports. To have a moment like this at this moment in the offseason too, right, as we're heading into OTAs, kind of reshapes how you can even look at the entire Bengals training camp and preseason portion of the schedule now. There's a lot less stress on how, say, Brandon Allen looks. There's a lot more opportunity to game plan specifically for Burrow and for week one, because, you know, now you know that Burrow can and will be a part of all of that. This is a huge moment, I think, and obviously the Bengals now have a much, much better chance to beat the Minnesota Vikings in week one, and that's a huge sign as well.
I think kind of going back to, and Tyler mentioned it with the preseason situation with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow proved in his rookie season he never needs to take another preseason snap. Nobody needs him out there in a preseason game, and obviously, yes, he's coming off of an injury, and he could be a little rusty in week one when he's out there against the Minnesota Vikings. But at the moment, that guy showed that he doesn't need to participate in preseason. There were reports earlier this week too that Joe, obviously on site at Paul Brown Stadium, finishing some of his rehab work. CJ Uzomah, I think that's a whole nother story, what he's been able to do with his rehab coming off an Achilles injury. He's out there, Jamar Chase is out there, and the reports were that Joe was throwing with his two targets right now. OTAs officially begin next week. We will be able to be there for the first day on Tuesday. It'll be through the week, 3 days of it next week. And every week we'll have reports and updates from that. Zach Taylor told us last week that it's week by week when it comes to Joe Burrow in the offseason program. There's OTAs, there's mini camp, there's training camp. Look, he's not going to be going out there and doing major things. And Joe told us this past winter that he wanted OTAs to take place in person. Not all teams are doing that. Obviously, it's voluntary. And the Bengals will be there, and they're expecting a pretty full crowd when it comes to the team. What are we going to see next week when it comes to Joe Burrow? And if he is throwing with some of his teammates, is that going to be continued through the offseason? Or is that just kind of, hey, they're at Paul Brown Stadium behind scenes, no one's there to see it, and it's nothing major?
You know, that is a good question. It's my guess that Joe Burrow won't throw during media availability. I think, and you know, if I were the Bengals, I would probably have Joe Burrow throwing to CJ Uzomah, Jamar Chase, and, you know, building that rapport with his teammates when the media is not there for us to dissect his every move and how his legs look, how his knee looks. That's what I would do. And I'm guessing the way the Bengals have operated during, you know, all my time covering them is he probably won't throw while we are there. But for our sake and the fans' sake, I hope he does throw during media availability so we can all report on it and talk about it. But as you said, Lindsay, he is throwing. He is, you know, doing some slight running. He is, like I said, like the doctor said, he is ahead of schedule. And, you know, as far as OTAs, though, I am not optimistic that we will see him physically throw. I want to be able to see him throw, but I don't think the Bengals are going to have that happen during the media availability.
It is kind of a sign of respect, though, how much now we'll be closely tracking every move Burrow makes. It was something that has been happening all offseason. There wouldn't be the same level of anticipation for the video of, you know, Burrow running on to Paul Brown Stadium that the Bengals posted on Twitter for the first time. It was probably in like March. That comes to mind, the hype that created. You know, that only happens if Joe Burrow was really, really, really good during his rookie season. And of course, he was. So he's kind of earned the hype almost every step he takes, step forward in his recovery process, not literally every step he takes, but every additional barrier, every additional hurdle that he crosses as he continues his recovery gets, honestly, the fan base more excited for the season and gives the Bengals a more realistic chance of having the kind of season they want to have in 2020. So whether or not we get to see it, the hype you almost can feel. And that's probably a good thing for Burrow and the Bengals.
In one of the most important positions right now, and one that we've talked about pretty much every podcast, the offensive line right now and Frank Pollock, to be determined on what it looks like. And it would be silly for Frank Pollock to already know his starters in May when it comes to what it's going to look like in September. Obviously, when an NFL player, a pretty good quality, is released, or reports that he wanted traded at first and that didn't happen and was released by Washington yesterday, Morgan Moses, he's a tackle position, and everyone's like, oh, the Bengals, they should add him. You can move Riley Reiff into guard. And here's my thing with the whole story is the Bengals need guard positions. Yeah, Riley Reiff is not long-term. They might get one good year out of him, and that might be enough. Jonah Williams is coming off of an injury to be determined if he can stay fully healthy for a full season. Jackson Carmen, at the moment, I'd put him over at right guard, but that's not even set in stone right now. Left guard up for grabs. You got Quinn Spain and Xavier Suofilo right now. When it comes to Morgan and just any offensive lineman when it comes to the tackle position, should the Bengals pull the trigger or should they just be focusing on the guard positions?
Well, you poured fuel on the fire yesterday, Lindsay, on Twitter. I did see your tweet. I definitely saw your tweet.
I did. You know, I'm there for the Twitter reaction.
Well, the Bengals have $23 million in available cap space, you know, according to Over the Cap. And that's not counting the two rookies they haven't signed officially yet, or the practice squad guys. So once you factor all that in, it's going to be obviously under $23 million. From what I am hearing, Morgan Moses wants, you know, pretty a high threshold of dollars to join any team. He believes he's one of the top right tackles in the National Football League, and he wants to be paid like a starting right tackle. And I just don't see that happening for the Bengals and for Morgan Moses to agree on a deal to bring him to Cincinnati. And plus, when the Bengals signed Riley Reiff in free agency, they signed him to play right tackle, and there was some assurance that he was going to be the team's starting tackle. So you have all that into play. Now, would he accept moving to guard? I mean, I don't know. He said in his press conference he would play anywhere, but the team signs him to play right tackle. Of course he's going to say he'll play anywhere during his press conference. Usually players don't say, I won't accept any other position. So, you know, I just don't see Morgan Moses coming to Cincinnati. And when it comes to the Bengals offensive line, I still believe it's going to be Riley Reiff at that right tackle spot. It's going to be Jonah Williams at left tackle. Now, the guard play, you were right, Lindsay, is still kind of up in the air. I think Quinton Spain is probably going to start at left guard, and then you have Jackson Carmen starting at right guard. But Xavier Suofilo, he's still in the running to start at either guard spot. And it's all dependent on how Jackson Carmen transitions from tackle to guard, and how, you know, how he's able to expedite his learning curve, and how he develops as an interior lineman after playing all of his collegiate career at tackle at Clemson. So that's going to be up for grabs. And then you have the center spot. I talked to Trey Hopkins. He's also ahead of schedule with his left knee. And, you know, he had surgery this offseason. He's, you know, doing well. He's doing everything what the doctors have said for him to do. But there's still, you know, a question mark if he's going to be available at the start of the season. He wants to be available. He thinks there's a good chance for him to be available, but just like Joe Burrow, there's still some doubt that he may or may not be available. And in the interim, you have Billy Price to, you know, take over and assume that role while Trey Hopkins is, you know, injured. So that's what the Bengals offensive line looks like right now. But there's still could be a few tinkerings here and there, but that's what it looks like as of May 21st, headed to OTAs.
So for all the talk of different offensive linemen the Bengals could add this offseason for another to become available, of course, I think it, you know, maybe should be an avenue the Bengals could explore, but, you know, he's not the first right tackle to become available this offseason. And there's kind of a way this works. These guys sign somewhere they can play right tackle, and right tackle money isn't extreme at all. Riley Reiff's making, what, $7 million? I think Alejandro Villanueva is in a similar ballpark. So it's not anything that will break your cap space. So that's where fit and opportunity becomes a big factor. If the Bengals added another right tackle, obviously that would mean Riley Reiff moves inside. While, just a quick tangent, I think that, you know, even if you are a tackle who's signed to be a tackle, the coaching staff ideally should be able to make work whatever the front office hands you. But the Bengals had an opportunity to pay, say, $7 million for a guard in free agency, and they didn't. So I kind of don't see 3 months later the Bengals signing another tackle and then having Riley Reiff basically as a $7 million guard when they didn't pay $7 million for a guard in free agency. You know, if I was going to pay $7 million for a guard to play guard or a tackle to play guard, I personally would have just paid a guard. So that's kind of how I see the Bengals offensive line shaping up right now, just like Tyler said, with those same players across left to right.
And somebody who I really trust, one who worked with offensive lineman Duke Mannyweather, who told me, and we talked about it, and everyone wants to say you can just move a tackle into the guard position and you're going to be just fine. There is a transition and a learning curve that could occur if they were to do that. I mean, obviously you want to put the best five guys out there, but just because you sign a tackle, you have your right tackle, and you think that Riley Reiff can just squeeze right in and transition to that, it's not as easy as it looks. And when it comes to the offensive line, I think another thing when it comes to storylines is the Bengals, you know, nationally, I think it's still out there. Obviously they haven't taken the field, all proof of what happened last year against the Washington football team and Joe Burrow's injury. And this team isn't doing enough, or it's the same offensive line. And obviously the Ja'Marr Chase, Penei Sewell talk is still out there, and on who they picked and who they didn't pick. And are they adding enough to their offensive line? Do you feel like this offensive line is getting fair? Is it fair how they're getting criticized right now?
Absolutely. You just finished the season where you gave up the most sacks and the most pressures in the AFC North. And Joe Burrow was running for his life back there before he blew out his knee. And that was on a play where the Washington football team's defensive line dominated the Bengals' offensive line. Not to mention, in the run game, the Bengals struggled to run the ball with and without Joe Mixon. And that is also a reason behind that is because of the offensive line. So, you know, when it comes to overall viewpoint of the Bengals offensive line, I do think that they are still a work in progress, and there's a lot of room to grow. Now, the addition of Frank Pollock as the offensive line coach, that is nothing to turn your back on, because he is a well-respected offensive line coach. The Bengals offensive line, the last time they were average or above, it was with Frank Pollock as the offensive line coach. So he is known as, you know, a quality offensive line coach. He, you know, builds guys up. He, you know, really fine tunes the fundamentals, and really he's known around NFL circles as a really good offensive line coach. The addition, we already talked about it, Riley Reiff, that's an upgrade from Bobby Hart. So that should help the Bengals offensive line, him instead of Bobby Hart, who has had an okay year last year, by the way, but Riley Reiff by and large is a better offensive lineman. And then you have Jackson Carman, who is coming in to compete at that interior guard spot. We'll see if he's able to beat out some of the veterans that they have. But you know, the Bengals, when you look at their offensive line on paper, it's not an offensive line that you would say this is a stout offensive line. And when you compare it to some of the, you know, really good offensive lines, the best offensive lines in the division, I don't think there's any argument. It will be the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. The Bengals and Steelers, we'll see which those are two of the offensive lines that are up in the air would probably last in the division. And so when you look at the Bengals and the Ja'Marr Chase and Penei Sewell debate, we've talked about this ad nauseum. If I were the GM, I would have picked Penei Sewell. I think Charlie said the same thing. Lindsay, you're on the Ja'Marr Chase bandwagon. That ship has already sailed. We all know how the Bengals, you know, went. So it's an offensive line that is a work in progress. That is what I will say right now. Now, I think the important thing is they need to practice together, build some continuity, and build some chemistry, because last year it was a revolving door across the offensive line. all the offensive linemen battle injuries. They never really got a lot of time to practice together. And it was just, you know, they're playing musical chairs across the entire offensive line. So stay healthy, evade the injury bug, and the addition of Frank Pollock helping this offensive line and, you know, really honing in on what this team needs to do better and the strengths and the weaknesses and really addressing those things, I think will be helpful. But it's going to be about practice and reps and building chemistry. And Frank Pollock, the addition of him, cannot be overlooked because I believe he can help upgrade this offensive line and, most importantly, protect Joe Burrow and upgrade the rushing attack, because you do have a really good running back in the backfield as well.
I feel the same way about the Bengals offensive line that I feel about their defensive line. And it's, they've done enough and invested enough in the group in the offseason for me to give them a legitimate chance to show what they can do. While on paper, it might not stack up as one of the top half groups in the league. You know, Riley Reiff, I've said this before, was probably the best offensive lineman who changed teams in free agency this season with respect to Alejandro Villanueva. And drafting a guard in the second round is a huge investment for the position. Very, very few pure guards go as high as the Bengals selected Jackson Carmen. And now basically at every position, the Bengals have guys who they handpicked. Jonah Williams was the first big selection for Zach Taylor. Quentin Spain's a guy they, you know, brought in last season and believed in strongly enough to hold on to that starting spot. Even Xavier Suofilo, who will compete with Quentin Spain, was someone the Bengals gave more money to than they give almost any guard they add in free agency. Hopkins is someone this coaching staff extended. And then there's Carmen and Reiff. So, you know, a nice cliche, we'll see how it plays out, but they have the pieces they wanted. So now you can really judge the Bengals knowing that you could argue that they feel like they've addressed the offensive line in a big way, because in a lot of ways they have.
Yeah, and we'll see more of that as OTAs and minicamp really get started next week. Tuesday, we'll have updates coming from Paul Brown Stadium. But before we end this podcast, go ahead, Tyler, with your questions of the week.
So I have three of them. First one is, Lindsay, you did some good reporting on Jamar Chase riding around in a scooter yesterday. So I want to ask you two, do you prefer scooters, bikes, rollerblades, or skateboards?
I'll go first because I might take a little longer. And I guess now Bengals Beat podcast listeners will know something new about me. I cannot ride a bike. I've tried to ride a bike. I have failed to ride a bike. I do not have the balance or coordination to do so, despite multiple efforts to make that happen. So because of my inability to ride a bike, I feel very not confident in my ability to do scooters or rollerblades or skateboards. So the answer for me is none of the above.
Wow. Lindsay, we have to teach Charlie how to ride a bike before 2023. Charlie has to learn how to ride a bike.
I mean, Charlie, you're going to have to, Charlie lives close to the stadium. I won't say where, but Charlie could ride a bike from where he lives. He doesn't even have to drive a car to the places he needs. And he could walk. Obviously he could walk too. You need to learn how to ride a bike.
I'm willing to learn, but you know, you guys are very nice, but many people have said, Charlie, I'm going to teach you how to ride a bike. And we've tried and it's been unsuccessful, but I'm always willing to get back up on the horse and try again. So who knows, maybe this is the time. Maybe this is what I need.
We'll give him some training wheels to start. We'll give him some training wheels, Lindsay, and then we'll take the training wheels off once, you know, we feel comfortable. I think that's the route to go.
I'll add one more thing. There are more people than you would guess who don't know how to ride a bike. You know, they're just probably not sharing it on podcasts, but if you're part of this group, you know, I hear you and there's more of us and it's okay.
I love this. Honestly, Charlie does it all. One of the hardest working guys in Cincinnati sports. And we found out one thing he's not good at, riding a bike, to be determined on what that looks like this summer. But I feel like Charlie's going to take this task head on, this challenge. I will say just the opposite. When it comes to a skateboard, I'd fall on my face. I haven't been on rollerblades in a minute, but I know that's a trend that's back. I am scared of the scooters. I will not do that. And the thing is, when when we talk about Ja'Marr Chase on the scooter, the reaction I get on social media is, please get that away from him. We don't want him to get injured on the scooter, because those things can go fast. And I will just say, I'm not trying to do it anytime soon. I will fall on my face. So I'm a bike. Yeah, I'm a bike girl. I'd rather ride.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a bike person. I cannot skateboard to save my life. Rollerblading, I'm probably a D minus at best at rollerblading. So I definitely prefer riding a bike. So I agree with you, Lindsay, on that. My second question of the week, I have three. Second question, I'm going to Jacksonville. It's a hot debate topic right now. Do you think Tim Tebow will make the Jacksonville Jaguars as a tight end?
You know what? It's actually, it's so bizarre, because it's actually a thought that I've had over the last couple of days. Obviously pictures out of him practicing with Jacksonville right now, and his jersey is one of the top selling in the NFL, and he's a topic of conversation. I don't see it. I really don't. I know that Urban Meyer's different. He's an NFL head coach now, and he's familiar with Tim Tebow, and it's been a minute since Tim has been out there. I think it's, you know, a storyline right now. It really doesn't bother me at all, as much as it is a story. I just don't see it happening, and that's just my opinion.
I have no thoughts on the topic, because Tim Tebow has no experience playing tight end, so this story does very little for me. Obviously, it's interesting always to bring Tebow back into the discourse, but there was the photo of him running around against the Bengals once, and that didn't go well. And I don't think the Tebow tight end experience will go well at all.
Yeah. He hasn't played in a decade. He has no experience playing tight end. It's really hard for me to see him making the team. He's beat the odds before and various levels at, you know, quarterback. He wasn't a good quarterback, but still he was drafted and won a playoff game. Baseball, he was a minor league baseball player. I just don't see him, you know, playing tight end at a professional level, 10 years removed from the game and never even play tight end. You got to be able to block, you got to be able to run routes, let alone catch passes. And I just don't see Tim Tebow blocking a defensive end or outside linebacker, protecting the quarterback, or, you know, running a good route to get open. That just doesn't seem likely to me, especially when you're 10 years removed from the game. And not to mention, you never even played tight end before. So I think he is not going to make the team, but that's not hating on Tim Tebow. I know when you speak negatively on Tim Tebow, sometimes people think you're hating on him. This is not hating on him at all. I just don't think he has the ability to be an NFL tight end. He, in my opinion, didn't really have the ability to be an NFL quarterback, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening. It's May right now, so much, and we're all familiar with how the NFL and the offseason work. So much can happen between May and September, but I don't see it happening. Obviously, he's still a big story in the sports world. We're going to have plenty of updates, as I mentioned. We will be
there. Wait, Lindsay, I got three questions. Of the week. Lindsay's always trying to cut off my questions of the week. So I think I know why you cut this off, because you know where I'm going with this question. And Charlie may know as well, because it's that time of year. It's the NBA playoffs. Starts Sun Saturday. Lindsay's still kind of mad that Steph Curry got beat by LeBron and the Lakers this week, but they have a chance to enter the playoffs tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies. So the playoffs are starting on Saturday. This is the last podcast before the beginning of the NBA playoffs. So I need your two finals prediction and NBA champion prediction.
Oh boy.
Over the Utah Jazz. I think that Giannis Antetokounmpo really leveled up offensively this season, and the issue they were missing last postseason was depth and overall scoring talent, which they have now. They can play in a variety of ways, and have so many good one-on-one defenders to beat Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Jazz, I think, just far and away were the best team in the NBA this season. Obviously, LeBron's injury played a huge part in that. But what has frustrated teams with the Lakers all season is their size. The Jazz can combat that. And I think that LeBron James is going to need to thrive at the rim, which is what he did as LA really pulled back into the game against, or as LA kind of came back after Golden State's comeback earlier this week. And that's just going to be so tough for LeBron to bully his way to the rim, which is what he does better than I think any player in NBA history. It's going to be so hard for him to do that with Rudy Gobert playing at his prime, since LeBron probably isn't at full strength. And, you know, from what I saw against Golden State, he doesn't have the same juice and pop specifically late in the game as he's coming back from this injury. I think the Jazz are a bad matchup for them, and I think the Jazz will make it to the finals and lose to Milwaukee.
I love that. And I'm going to be completely honest. I have not paid enough attention to the NBA playoffs. And I'll just say this. I like Steph Curry. I think he's fun to watch. Obviously didn't want him to lose the other night. I can't even give you a winner. I can't even give you my finals winner because I haven't paid enough attention to the NBA season. One thing I will say about this playing game, I'm all about. And more the other night, more people on social media the other night were talking about what was happening in the playing game that probably didn't follow the season all along. I didn't do it this year, but when it comes to postseason and playoffs, I'm here, I'm watching it, I'm interested, who's in it, who's not. So I don't even have a finals prediction. So I didn't answer your question, and I don't have one. I don't want to lie and just pick one. Charlie gave a really good answer and I didn't. The end.
Okay. Well, I am disappointed that you didn't answer, Lindsay. Charlie, you provided a good answer. I didn't particularly like your answer, but I respect your opinion. I have the Nets going to the finals in the Eastern Conference. I think Kevin Durant stacked his team again. That's why I'm not a real big Kevin Durant fan. I can see AJ Green's face right now rolling his eyes at me when I say this, but I just don't really, I'm not fond of him. Kevin Durant, that is. And I have, obviously, the Lakers going to the finals in the Western Conference. Yes, maybe I am a little bit biased, but I don't care. I can be biased. And they're the champions. So I have the Lakers and the Nets going to the finals. And y'all already know who I have winning. Repeat champions.
No. That's a homer move.
I'm gonna be a homer for once. I'm not really ever a homer, so I'm gonna be a homer for once.
I don't know what you're talking about. We'll see what happens. We'll never hear the end of it if the Lakers end up winning this. So I don't know, but it's fun. I'm actually enjoying it, and I think that this should be something that's a permanent factor when it comes to postseason in the NBA. Is that it, Tyler? You done with your questions?
That is it. Unless you two have questions of the week for me, or, you know, I'm free. I'm fair game.
No, but I would like to add this. I do have my Twitter up while we're doing this podcast, and I just found out in Cincinnati today is bike your way to work day, and Charlie will not be doing that. So I had no.
Oh, man.
What a special holiday.
Well, I won't be biking to work either. So, Charlie, I'm with you right now. I don't even own a bike in Cincinnati, so I can't bike anyways.
I don't know. I have a feeling that Charlie's going to excel this summer on the bike, and it's really going to be a thing. We'll see. We'll be going to training camp at Paul Brown Stadium, and there's Charlie parking his bike. This is going to happen. This is terrible.
I can see Charlie right now locking his bike up. Yep, with his key. Yep, I can see it happening.
Yeah.
Training wheels off by training camp.
Totally. To be determined on when that happens. But we will be back in action next Tuesday, Paul Brown Stadium. As I mentioned, we'll be able to see a little bit what's happening at Paul Brown when it comes to OTAs. The Bengals are expecting several players to be in attendance, even though it is voluntary minicamp right around the corner, and then training camp. We'll have the latest on Cincinnati.com, but what else is up there, guys?
So Jaxon Carman signed his rookie deal this week. I have a newser on that. That means 8 of the 10 members of the team's rookie draft class have now eat deals. Jamar Chase and Joseph Asai, they have not signed their rookie deals. And speaking of Joseph Asai, I have a story on him. It's a feature kind of about his upbringing and his track to the NFL. So definitely check that out at Cincinnati.com.
I have a few Bengals stories up. The first is on six-round pick running back Chris Evans, and You know, a lot of people say he can do some of what Giovanni Bernard did last season as a pass catcher out of the backfield. But I looked at some of the numbers and what it's like for a rookie running back in that position in roles like that. Then coming up later this week, I spoke to Bengals wide receivers coach Troy Walters. It's his first time as the number one wide receiver coach in the NFL. And what's it like when your wide receiver group is arguably one of the best in the NFL? Now, on top of that, Reds coverage as well. I got a feature on Jesse Winker coming soon that I'm really excited about.
Check it out, Cincinnati.com. Plenty of sports coverage over on Instagram, ENQ Bengals, over on Twitter, ENQ Sports. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.